For more of the Chinese Radio Network, go to the CRN section on AM 1240 WGBB.com.
You're listening to the station that serves your
community. In the heart of the nautical mile, you're listening to the station that serves your community. AM 1240 WGBB.com and 1240 WGBB Freeport.
Welcome to the Everything Lydia Radio Show, where you're challenged to check your ordinary at the door and live a more remarkable life. Your host, Lydia Shevardowski, does it all. She's a lawyer, a black belt, philanthropist, and a beauty queen who is working for you. And you can hear just about everything and anything on the Everything Lydia Radio Show, from politics to pocketbooks, every Wednesday night at 6:30, only on WGBB 1240 AM or online at www.am1240wgbb.com. Now, your host, Lydia.
And greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Everything Lydia Radio Show. I am your host, Lydia Shevardowski, and tonight we're going to take a walk on the wild side, and we're going to talk about reptiles, conservation, the status of our environment, tropical rainforests, and so on and so forth. And joining me tonight to discuss all of these topics and many others is someone who actually grew up just a few streets away, right in West Babylon. And reptiles were a part of my guest's business career since he was a child. At one point, apparently his garage was filled with reptiles that he had collected in the areas around his home, which I can't wait to hear about. And he got them from other kids, from other neighbors. And he actually would go to the local TSS department store and sell them to the store, which
I think
is fabulous. And then I guess the manager would buy him an ice cream and he'd make some money. My guest has also made well over 40 trips to tropical rainforests, and today he shares his knowledge and passion through various outreach programs and educational events to schools, libraries, and other groups. My guest is also the founder of the International Fauna Society, which is a 501c3 charity. And he produced a National Geographic quality magazine known as Fauna, which featured amazing images from some of the world's greatest wildlife photographers. He also opened Fauna, which is the, you ready? Am I going to say this right? Serpentarium.
Like an aquarium. Really different, yeah.
In Riverhead, New York, which is a living museum, and it's showcasing 200 plus animals in naturalistic vivariums. There we go. My guest this evening is the one and the only Jungle Bob Smith.
How are we doing? Smith
Bob.
And Shevardowski.
I know. Well, it was funny because one of the things I asked Susie was, does Jungle Bob have a last name?
Yeah.
She goes, it's Smith, believe
it or not.
Can't
get easier than that, yeah.
So, welcome, Bob. Thank you so much. Now, I want everyone to know, whoever is listening out there, if you can get to a computer and go to the website for the station, which is am1240wgbb.com, you will notice that there are some animals crawling around.
We've taken over.
Just for what it's worth, now we have this lovely, I'm going to use layperson's terms. It's an orangish kind of copperish colored with white stripes and black snake, which is a what type of snake?
Actually called a milk snake.
A milk snake.
Yep.
His little tongue, he's checking me out.
Totally harmless animal.
Really beautiful. And then we also have
a lizard called a blue-tongued skink.
I have to tell you, that is one of the coolest animals I've ever seen. It's like, it looks like a cross between a fish, right, a snake, and a lizard. And it has these cute little legs that, and this great blue tongue, which is wonderful.
He's got the scalation of a fish, that's for sure. And his arms and legs are kind of falling off or atrophying off his body.
Wow.
He doesn't use them as much as his other lizard friends. But
all right. Well, we're going to get to why these animals are here in a second and where they come from and everything else. But, all right, so my first question, Bob, is what's a nice guy from West Babylon doing with a bunch of reptiles and traveling through the rainforest?
How did this all start? Wow,
it's
a totally full circle day for me to come here to this radio station, because one of those forays we had when we were kids was right in the backyard here.
We used to
catch animals back in the day. I hate to say that term because you don't know how old it is, but back when Route 109 was a one-lane highway, there were snakes all around this area.
Wow.
And this was one of the places we'd go on the other side of Sunrise Highway and go catch snakes behind the radio station. And
you know, I've lived on Long Island my whole life, and I can honestly tell you, I may have seen one or two garter snakes in my life. Never have have I seen a snake anywhere.
Well, they're very secretive animals.
Yeah, obviously.
Contrary to popular belief, they don't go attacking people and running up to people like they do in the movies. So that's a big part of what Jungle Bob's organization's all about now, is dispelling the myths about these unusual life forms. There's so much bad press. The milk snake, for example, that's a 200 or 300 year old fable that some farmer, who was probably in the corn squeezings there too much, claimed that he saw the snake in the barn drinking milk out of the cow's udder. And that's how it got the name milk snake. And when he startled it, of course, it grabbed its tail, formed a hoop, and rolled down the hill. And when I was a kid in the West Babylon School District, I remember seeing the books that had the picture of the snake with its tail in his mouth rolling down the hill. It's never happened. It's never been seen before or since. Yet it perpetuates in the myths of reptile lore. And that's what we do, is we drop these myths by telling particularly kids, but these days all ages, what the truth is about them.
Well, let's start out now. You were a kid, and I love this story. I read it on your website that it all started when you were about, well, maybe even before this, but one of your recollections, you're 6 years old, and you're walking along the street, and this garter snake, because I had mentioned one, ran across, and what happened? Everyone scurried and got
ahead. Well, it was a specific time in my life and a particular moment, because I was a kid out of the city. I came out of Hell's Kitchen in Manhattan and moved out to this rural area called West Babylon. My dad was a New York City cop.
My
mom was a nice Italian mama from Brooklyn, and they never saw a snake in their lives. So, of course, little Bobby's out there on the front lawn, the other kids in the neighborhood, real suburban, one house after the other, with a hedgerow in between each house. They're not bothering with me the first few days because I'm the new kid in the block. Well, here comes the snake cutting through the hedgerow, and it came on my side. I just instinctively went over and picked it up, and they all came running around, stopped dead in their tracks. The new kid's crazy. He picked up
a snake. He picked up the snake. Oh, my God.
They were told to be afraid and stay away. And it was one of those garter snakes. And it did take a chomp out of me. It bit my thumb.
Oh, it did?
Yeah, it did.
You're right.
My mom, in a famous scene still etched in my brain, came running out of the kitchen with her apron on, you know, in slow motion. Like I had a cobra bite. But of course, it was a harmless garter snake, native to Long Island, one of the most common snakes we have. And, you know, I was fascinated by the animal itself, but I was almost as fascinated by the reaction from the people. From my own parents to the kids that were in that neighborhood that day, some of whom are still friends of mine to this day. We may have embellished on the story a little bit, but that's how it happened. How it started. A couple of weeks later, I met some other people in the neighborhood who said, "You want to catch some more of those?" I knew where to find them. And here we go. And I've been on that path ever since.
And you've been peddling snakes and reptiles like you did at TSS, which we'll get to, you know, what you're doing.
Not always peddling, but exploring and finding.
I mean that in the best way.
No, but I've only been in the resale business in the last couple of years. It's been mostly traveling, conservation, photography, magazines, things of that nature. Just 3 years ago, we started Jungle Bob's Reptile World, which is a pet store.
Okay. All right. So let's go back a little bit now. So you're still, you know, you're a kid, you're growing up, and you know, there came a point in time that you started to travel.
Yeah.
Now, how old were you approximately when you traveled to your first tropical rainforest?
Late 30s. Yeah, late 30s.
So tell us a little bit about that, because I'm fascinated by that whole
Took a while to get out there, but I picked Costa Rica as a place who I always dreamed of and imagined. And I was the kind of person, if I go on vacation to Disney World with the kids, we'd be off on the side of the attractions trying to find lizards on the back of the trees. We've always been fascinated by this stuff, but never had the chance really to travel exotically or internationally for these things. But I did. I went on a trip with some like-minded people to Costa Rica and walked through my first primary rainforest, which is the real old growth types, down in Corcovado National Park, southern Costa Rica. And I just was touched by this. I said, this is something that transcends religion and political viewpoints. If people around the world who are fighting over whatever they're fighting about could take a walk through the forest, I think they'd calm down and see things in a different light. And I went back again and again and again. I went back to Costa Rica so many times I started leading tours there. And that became a lot of fun as well, turning people on who hadn't seen it before.
So you would bring people from the United States?
Yes.
I think this snake likes my microphone, by the way.
He likes yours better than mine.
As much as he's lovely, like him a lot.
He's a curious
but
little
he's,
guy.
He wants to wrap around my microphone, and it's a little too close to my mouth. Sorry.
That's okay.
Not that I'm squeamish when it comes to snakes. Okay, so you would have groups of people that you would bring on these trips?
Yes. We did that for a couple of years, and then, you know, time really was not on our side in that regard. But we're contemplating picking that idea up again in 2013 to go down and show a small group of like-minded people that usually it's shopping the store where these animals look like in their native habitat. That's very important.
Now, one of the things that you discuss is the plight of the forests. Like, what, you know, here you're at the in the rainforest, you're seeing all this natural beauty, but you're also seeing obviously things that made you very concerned.
Yes.
What were those things?
Well, I got, when I had that International Fauna Society, again, which is history now, that not-for-profit group, I got involved with other not-for-profit groups and did a couple of, you know, black tie affairs in the city at Cipriani's about, you know, they're honoring some CEO of some company because he's doing something wonderful for the forest. And I got disillusioned with how detached those people really were from being on the street, meaning being on the forest. Anybody really been there and seen what I've seen? As you're in your car going from one forest to the other, you find that it's really broken up by highways and what have you. You see giant logging trucks flying by you. Even the pet trade, which I'm now currently involved in, it kind of depletes these rainforests because the people there are always poor. Equatorial nations are poor by virtue of them just being in the wrong spot.
Right.
And wildlife such as this, which may be a $100 item in the store, are 10 cents if you want to pick it up from the local person.
Well, so, I mean, that's true. When you're dealing with these lower socioeconomic countries, they just don't have that same perspective. They're not, I mean, I think things are changing, but they don't necessarily care about what they're doing to the environment.
Yeah, if you're making $1 an hour and I walk up to you and say, I'll give you $10 for the skink, you're going to go get the skink out of the forest and hand them to me. It's just the way it is. So we try to preach in the store buying animals that are born in captivity. We captively propagate these things, just like dogs, cats, parrots, and et cetera in the pet trade. No one goes into the wild to get a dog anymore. They're domesticated. And these animals are becoming domesticated as well through, you know, mostly smaller companies and individuals who breed them out of a passion and provide the pet trade, and that's stopping people going back into the forest to take more out. So that's one thing we're very, very involved with, is promoting that as much as we can.
Now, do you do this promoting through, I know you have a ton of educational programs. Maybe we can talk about those a little bit. Now, you go to schools, or tell us a little bit about your programs.
Yeah,
I have a list here, but go
Jungle
ahead.
Jungle Bob Live Show, we call it the unloved, the unusual, and the unknown. We dispel the myths about reptiles, amphibians, which are frogs and toads, and invertebrate creatures, tarantulas, scorpions, and the like. And if there's ever three animals on the planet, three types of animals that people loathe, I think I just hit all three of them. I don't like spiders and snakes, like the old song. People just have wrong information.
Yep.
I take an animal like this sometimes out at a birthday party, and a mom like yourself would run out of the room out of fear because they don't know anything about them.
Yeah. So
most times, by the end of the presentation, they're either holding them, they've at least tried to touch them, and we've moved on. You know, a snake is not slimy, as you've experienced today.
No.
There's 3,000 plus different types of snakes on the planet. None of them are slimy. Yet that adjective is used over and over again wherever I go, usually in comparison to Wall Street people. They're slimy snakes. They call them slimy. I say, don't insult my snakes.
See, they should call them eels.
Those are slimy. Exactly.
That I know from personal experience catching them at low tide, like
Jack
I was
eels.
Mentioning to you.
Yeah, eels and worms are slimy,
but
snakes are not. They're dry skinned creatures.
Yeah.
And then we go on, you know, we talk about to scouting groups, for example, we do good pets and bad pets. This would be a great little pet. This is a full grown snake. Yet there are some snakes that will grow 20 feet. That's not a good idea. There are lizards that grow 6 feet. That's not a good idea.
Yeah.
Green iguanas is something we've been against for many, many years. Very, very popular animal in the big box stores. You know, I can't really mention their name on the radio.
We know which ones they are.
We know which ones
they
are.
They usually have the word pet in them.
Yeah, pet blank, blank, blank. That they perpetuate another myth in the pet husbandry business, and that is you keep a reptile in a small cage, he stays small, he stays stunted by the size of his enclosure. That's just not true. So they sell these little green iguanas for $9.99, or they give you one if you buy the whole setup. They grow to be 6 feet, and they get very, very aggressive and nasty when they get old.
Yeah.
What happens then? They're unceremoniously dropped off on the doorstep of my store. Here, Jungle Bob, I don't want these anymore.
Really? Do people do that?
Oh, all the time. Yeah, we get drop-offs. Most of the animals you see here have been rescued, quote-unquote, that people didn't want them anymore.
Oh, wow.
That's where they come from. So.
All right. So that presentation that you just mentioned, that's one of them. You also have educational programs that are just generally about anything. The animals around us, Exploring Habitat, one is called, Expedition Rainforest, Amazing Amphibians. I like this one, Creepy, Crawly, Cool.
Yep.
I can only guess. Like, obviously, Serpent Symphonies, you're dealing with snakes. And I think it's terrific that you are dispelling the myth.
There's subsets of the bigger program, mm-hmm. and more specific. You're right. They're just about the invertebrates. They're just about the snakes. I've also been privileged to go to the Amazon 3 times. Mm. That made my trips to Costa Rica look like going to North Babylon.
When did you do that?
I went in, 98, mm-hmm. 2002, 2005.
What was that like? Tell us a little. I love this. Tell me a little bit.
Yeah, well, again, the Amazon.
You fly into where, and what do you, you take a car, and then you take a boat? I mean, how did that whole thing work?
It's a giant place. It's the Amazon rainforest, if you took a copy of the map and put it on top of the United States, is just about the size of the United States, off a little of California. Mm-hmm. So it's really a big piece of land and covers mm-hmm. 9 different countries. Mm-hmm. So you can get to it from many, many avenues. But mm-hmm. A very popular one for people like to explore and to do adventure are the headwaters, which are in Peru. Mm-hmm. So you fly into Lima, Peru, which is a huge city, mm-hmm. population the size of the United States, of New York. And then you fly over the Andes Mountains, which is quite an experience, and you drop into this valley, which is the Amazon River Basin.
Right.
And you don't see anything as far as you can see in the plane. It's just 3,000 miles of forest.
Wow.
Largely unexplored. Mm-hmm. And you go to little swaths of it. You need a guide. You can't go by yourself. You have to get a local person to show you around. But the lushness of it, the sheer size of it, the magnitude, the amount of animals that are there is beyond anything you can comprehend. Mm-hmm. And we're cutting this down as fast as you can possibly imagine.
Yeah.
National Geographic does great jobs taking aerial views of what it used to be like and what it is now, to plant soybeans, to plant hay for cattle, to do cattle grazing. We're trying to turn South America into North America and do what we did here, which was destroy the landscape from New York all the way to California. You know, we cut everything down and put up houses and had cows grazing and drove out all the natural animals. So,
well, is that what's going on there now?
That's what's going on. They're planting crops that are wanted on a worldwide basis. Mm-hmm. They could do it cheap. The soil is so fertile. The water is beautiful. The air is perfect. Things mm-hmm. always grow. But you'll find if you do that to an ecosystem like the Amazon rainforest, you get a year, maybe two out of a crop, and then it's a barren wasteland.
Really? Why is
that?
The
soil is very, there's not much topsoil there.
Uh-huh.
And the plants really need each other to grow again and again and again. And once you strip it and just plant one thing, the rains come and wipe away that topsoil. Mm-hmm. So it's leaving scars all over the land. They dig into the forest 300 miles, they'll make a road and they'll start putting plantations in. And that scar with the roadway invites people to come in, people that would never be there before. They settle. They're working the farms. And as soon as the land drives up, they just cut another one and do it again.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really upsetting if you could see it from the air.
Mm-hmm.
And the statistics are sobering. And what we're trying to do really is, by showing the lower life forms, mm-hmm. get people to understand it from a different angle. You know, mm-hmm. I've been to many of those $500 plate affairs, polar bears, tigers, all the big predators, the big mammals. And you know, we love them. And
they're cute and fluffy, that's why.
They're important. The cubs are always beautifully cute.
Right.
This is not cute.
Oh, he is cute.
But if you can get somebody to like this or understand the role of this animal in the environment, maybe you'll have a better sense for the whole ecosystem. It's not just about the polar bear. There's a lot of things going on in the Arctic other than just the plight of the polar bear.
Yeah.
So we're trying to educate people in that regard. And I tell you, the kids really get it.
Yeah.
Kids understand it. People our age, sometimes it's past them.
Well, it's because of people like you. And I think that it's wonderful that you do go to the schools. I mean, my baby girl, she's 11, and she is kind of like me. She's not squeamish when it comes to animals.
Yeah, which we love to see.
And I really admire the fact that she's very careful with how she treats everything, other than spiders. So we can't talk about those because she hates spiders. But that's just...
I don't like mosquitoes. I swat them.
I hate those, too. But any animals, the respect that she has is wonderful, and I really admire that, and I really think it's because of education.
Right.
And that's what your focus is on, education.
That really is it. That's the bottom line.
Yeah.
The pet store came as a secondary idea. That's why we built this Outback. We're just going to open it up this weekend.
What is that? Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, we had a piece of land in the back behind the store was out back behind the store. So we said, let's put a little education center out there so I don't have to go schlepping these animals all over the place in boxes. I could actually do it right here for the customers that come into the store. And it started as a very, very minor idea, which is a few benches and, you know, we'll put out some chairs and we'll do something. Mm-hmm. Well, 2,500 square feet of finished property later with turtle ponds, carnivorous plant bogs to show people some flora as well as all the animals we have, mm-hmm. tortoise pits, lizard pits, kids can feed the animals on the weekend, we're booking birthday parties, scouting events.
That sounds like so much fun. Now, where is this? This is located where? I mean, we'll get to all that again later, but
yeah, this is at the store. Jungle Bob's Reptile Well is in Center Reach on uh-huh. Middle Country Road, 2536 Middle Country Road, which is Route 25. So you'll zip by it, you'll never know it's there unless you stop, come all the way through the store, and out the back door you go, and you're into this little wonderland of a sanctuary. I have to say was well done. So it was a community effort. A lot of our customers helped us with the carpentry, the masonry, mm-hmm. And we just had some great people passionately saying, we got to get this done. The fortunate winter we had with not a lot of freezing ground mm-hmm. allowed us to be way ahead of the schedule, and we're open as of today.
I'm checking that out this weekend.
You got to come
the
by.
Kids.
You
no, I am. Yeah. I really am.
We have the big lizards outside wandering around, a huge tortoise the kids can feed with a little bit of a hand guard. We have the tortoise loves to eat his vegetables, uh-huh. so it's a great place for the kids and old alike.
I was just in Puerto Rico, and there was it's a commercial place, and they have this little island, and there were iguanas but they were running around and huge. I mean, 6 feet long, maybe
the big green ones you saw, those are the ones that are selling in the pet blankety blank, and the big dark ones are the ones we like enjoy, the rock iguanas they're called. They get very tame when they get old.
Aww.
So when you come by, we'll introduce you to some of them too.
They're beautiful. I'll definitely do that. Now, tell us a little bit about the store. Now, you have the Outback, which is more of a educational, you know, facility where you can look at plants and animals and the kids can go and feed,
right.
which I think sounds very interactive and lovely.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a fee, by the way?
No fee to go in. No.
We may have some
guest lecturers come through.
Yeah.
There's a fee for birthday parties, scouting uh-huh. events. When groups come in, they can rent the backyard.
Uh-huh.
The back half of it.
After the show, we're going to talk a little bit.
Yeah.
I guess once we get people in
we'll do a little birthday party action for your 11-year-old, that's for sure.
Oh, that would be great. But now you had mentioned that, obviously, as a child, you were selling to TSS, and then it was just recently that you actually opened up the retail aspect of
yes.
the store.
Yeah, there's been a reptile store in Center Reach for over a decade, mm-hmm. and it just never really hit its stride. It wasn't as popular as it should have been. Mm-hmm. A lot of the reptile industry, as far as their segment of the pet industry, blossomed after Jurassic Park.
Mm-hmm.
Jurassic Park and the series of movies got people interested in dinosaurs, which dovetailed into reptiles.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when this all started. This industry is growing. It's the only part of the pet industry that's growing in the last 5 years. Dogs, cats, birds, tropical fish is all sliding mm-hmm. or staying kind of stagnant, where ponds mm-hmm. and reptiles, amphibians is a little bit on the upswing, according to the industry information that we receive.
All
so
right. So you have a full-service
right
facility.
Spot.
You sell everything. So
full service. We have 90 different cages. They're all beautifully decorated in naturalistic mm-hmm. vivariums, we call them. That's the
right.
word you stumbled on before.
Hey.
Aquariums for water,
yes.
terrariums of land. Vivariums have running water, live plants, and live animals in them living in harmony. And now I got a snapshot of that Costa Rican rainforest again.
Yeah.
And what did that lizard look like when I saw it? What did that tree frog do? Hope he doesn't unplug us here.
I know, right?
What did that tree frog, what kind of leaf is he sitting on? We try to get it really down to that kind of specific, that we're showing the plants in the cage that really come from the area the animal lives in. That's really the ultimate then. So this was a hobby back in those Times Square days where, mm-hmm. you know, we had a fish tank.
You should get him because I don't want him to fall on the ground. He's very cute.
A fish tank with a newspaper and a lid. And that was it.
That was it. Exactly.
And there was no information on how to keep them. We didn't know about lighting, ultraviolet lighting, which is so important to them. Mm-hmm. We didn't know about the proper heat sources. There was no information whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
Today, there's an incredible amount of books on all these subjects. He's gone now.
He's gone.
There's an incredible
amount.
He's not going far, though.
Is he
going
to go on the ground?
He'll be all right. He likes it on the ground.
I love it. I wish people could see what's going on here. It's hysterical. And you also have an online store.
Yes,
so
we also sell.
You could sell
right now. Pretty much the supplies. There's a lot of supplies. The store is heavily stocked. It's almost a warehouse for reptile supplies. They need specialty lights. They need bedding. all kinds of crazy food. Our food court, people's eyes pop out of their head because we sell...
Like, what do you have?
Well, mice and rats and crickets and six or seven different times of bugs, earthworms, superworms, and fruit flies, and even, believe it or not, cockroaches.
Really? Who eats cockroaches?
Azul loves
them.
This guy? Yeah, most lizards are insect eaters, and they love those types of things. So people just stroll in, just like yourself, on their way to work in their suit and tie sometimes, ordering a dozen crickets and two mice to go.
Excellent.
Interesting place.
Cool. I love it. I love it. Yeah. Now, you also, I found this intriguing. I know that you're a pioneer in the proper care, which you're talking about right now. You just mentioned that people don't know about the heat that they should be, the UV and everything else. There was a newspaper, right, called The Keeper?
Yes.
It was a national newspaper that went out free of charge to pet stores, exhibitions, and whatnot. Tell us a little bit about what you've seen, the good, the bad. I mean, I can only imagine what you've come across.
Yeah, it's almost an impossible subject. There's, 3,000 different snakes, 3,000 different lizards, God knows how many turtles, frogs, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And many of them make their way into the pet trade. So to know the specific care by knowing the environment they come from for every species is almost impossible. Because then at nighttime, their temperature is different. Some of them are nocturnal. Some of them are daytime, which is diurnal. So little by little, people are putting together tremendous catalogs that this milk snake is from Mexico, and this is the temperature during the day, and it likes to hide, and at night the temperature drops.
Not that one. He's exploring.
He's active during the day, but at night he wants to go underneath something because snakes don't have any eyelids, for example. Uh-huh. They can't close their eyes, so they have to hide at night. They have to go underneath something and be secure. That's probably what he's looking to do.
Oh.
It's almost his time. He wants to go to sleep. He wants to find someplace to curl up. It's dark. The light in the room freaks him out. He can't shut his eyes. So to know all that information about where they come from, what the habitat looks like, and what they eat, it's still on. It's very much ongoing in the pet trade. So I saw a lot of bad information out there. The internet is good and bad. There's some people posting correct information, some not so correct.
Right.
And I was fortunate back in the magazine days to travel with and hang with a lot of the foremost herpetologists in the world, which is a herpetologist is a studier of reptiles and amphibians, herpetology. And I think I came up with a good formula for most of the common species. So we started putting that out in that Keeper newspaper.
Okay.
Then we started soliciting other people saying, you keep blue-tongued skinks, you breed them, how do you do it? And getting their information and adding it to the pile. So the Keeper, unfortunately, wasn't a financial success, but we're going to take a lot of that same information
when you have people come free to your place and you give away free newspapers, that doesn't always work.
That is a problem we have.
That's a problem. Although I admire that. I really do.
We're so passionate about getting
the education.
Right,
getting it out there. Now, I know that you have some crazy, and I mean that in, again, the best way, animals at your facility.
Yeah.
And I read on your website that, you got some stuff going on there. Well, give us a list of what you have.
Yeah, I call it my posse. As far as the animals that I travel with, I mean, Azul, the blue-tongued skink, is one of them. We have a large Cuban rock iguana, which we named Castro, appropriately, because he's from the island of Cuba. He's kind of our ambassador of conservation, because we're finding that particular group of animals is really disappearing quickly because of the habitat loss in the Caribbean. Ike is one of a pair of large African tortoises we have. Beautiful little tortoises that start out about that big that you can't resist and impulsively buy, turn into 150-pound, over 100-year-old animals that are not easy to keep as a pet. They need tremendous room and tremendous care. So we're trying to stop people from buying them, but we have Ike and Tina Tortoise, and they're out in the yard for people to experience and wonder at and say, this is fantastic. If you're living in Florida or Nevada, someplace where it's warm 24 hours a day most times of the year, you can keep an animal like that in the yard. But in New York, it's crazy to try to hold on to an animal like that. It's like having a horse in your living room.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, it's not something you want. But
I have two red-eared sliders.
Another perfect example.
I do.
Hold on to your hat. They live 50 years.
Oh, no. Really? Do they get big?
They live a long time. They get about yay big.
Wow.
And everybody does that impulsive Canal Street
purchase. Should I tell you the truth? That's exactly what happened.
Yeah, Canal Street,
Some woman walked up to me, a little grandmother woman, and she said, do you want to buy some turtles? And I looked at them and I said, oh, they're so cute.
They're
of course
so cute.
I do.
Well, so that's one of the reasons we started the Outback was to make to put a turtle pond in. Mm-hmm. And we made it deep enough so that those animals, they hibernate in the wintertime, mm-hmm. that if anybody has water turtles they want to dispose of now I have a place you could bring them. But for the first 3 years I had the store, people come on a weekly basis and say, here, and I don't have the room for it.
Yeah,
they need
to
be filtered and they need a lot of care, lot of specialty lighting, and it's just impossible for one person to take care of everybody else's mistakes.
I can see that, but I like I said, I give you so much credit, and I admire you for really your passion.
Thanks.
And for educating communities everywhere. So if someone wants to get in touch with you, they want to book you, they want to get information about you speaking or about anything, birthday parties, supplies, how can they get in touch with you?
Well, I guess the best way is just jump on the website.
Okay, and what's that again?
JungleBobsReptileWorld.com.
Okay.
Or our phone number is 631-737-6474 up there on Middle Country Road in Center Reach. So,
all right.
Come on down. Check it out.
Yeah. Well, like I said, I'm going to be there this weekend.
Awesome.
God willing.
Yeah.
I will try. I'm making a promise here, but I do want to do that.
I didn't want to bring the 12-foot snakes. The room didn't look big enough.
You know what? I have to tell you, you have some other animals, and just mention what else you have, because we have like 1 minute, but you brought a tarantula.
Well, I'll switch up. Reptiles are often studied with amphibians. Mm-hmm. They're mistaken sometimes. Reptiles are dry-skinned animals. The amphibians are wet-skinned animals, and the best example is a frog.
All right, so I want to see this big frog you have.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
So rather than have any old frog, we've
got
Jabba.
That is the coolest. Trevor, you looking at that?
Trevor, come on up.
So what kind of frog is that?
This is Jabba. He's an African bullfrog. Very unusual animal who is a little on the chubby side.
I mean,
very,
he looks wet, but he's not.
He's not. He's dried off a little bit in the box he was in traveling here.
Uh-huh.
But he likes his moist environment. He sits in a big pile of moss.
Uh-huh.
But we love to sell these in the pet trade. They call them pixie frogs because their head is very small. The pixicephalus frog.
Well, I wouldn't
very
say
tiny
small,
head,
but
comparative
to
his body.
Yeah, compared to... Do these two guys get along?
Probably not. Different continents.
Yes.
Different altogether.
Oh, my goodness.
But if you're a kid reading a book in school about frogs, what do frogs eat? Flies, right? Every book you ever see, frogs are eating flies.
Yes, and with their little tongue.
From Kermit to Princess and the Frog, it's always a good thing with frogs, where frogs really are predators. Frogs have teeth. This guy eats a variety of animals. If I put that snake in front of him, he'd take a bite out of the snake.
Wow.
Yeah, so he's really a predator that has to be watched.
Okay.
Not that he's
going to
harm you or I, but he eats a lot of things.
Okay. Well, we have 15 seconds. Do we have time? Because let's see what else.
Might as well freak
last
you out.
Last one. Oh, God, I don't like... That's one thing my daughter's like, forget it, spiders.
Last but not least,
We'll
see Rosie the tarantula.
Rosie.
Another,
now, why do they have such a bad rap? I mean, do they bite?
I don't know. I guess it's because of the way they move.
Do they bite? Do they sting?
They can bite.
Yeah.
I can bite. Azul can bite. You can bite. Anybody can bite that has teeth. This particular species is a rose hair tarantula.
Yeah.
I promise it won't.
All right. No, I believe you. Aw. So if my little Rachel is watching, I just want you to see Mommy's holding a big,
check that
huge
out. Mom's doing
tarantula.
The job today. Yeah, the snake disappeared. Aww. You got the tarantula. We're doing good.
Yeah, the snake's gone. It's crawling up my leg. All right. Well, Bob, I want to thank you. Unfortunately, we ran out of time.
That's
I'd love
okay.
to have you back sometime. We'll check in and find out what's going on with the, the Outback.
Okay.
Right? Not the steakhouse, but your Outback,
yes,
right?
Let's not make that mistake, yeah.
So that's it for tonight, Bob, and I welcome everyone out there to please tune in to the Everything Lydia Radio Show next week and every Wednesday evening at 6:30 p.m. right here on WGBB, 1240 a.m. or streaming live and via webcam. Wave to the webcam at www.am1240wgbb.com. And everyone, remember to check that ordinary at the door and go live that remarkable life. And we'll see you soon.
Perfect.
Bye.
Thanks so much.
Join us for more of the Everything Lydia Radio Show every Wednesday night at 6:30 right here on WGBB 1240 AM. Have a legal question? Go online to AskLydiaTheLawyer.com. And to learn more about our host, Lydia Szczepanowski, or to hear a piece of tonight's show you might have missed, visit EverythingLydia.com. Thank you for joining us.